It is Monday, December 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump promotes his relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping and the new trade deal with China. The United States prepares to bid farewell to a former president. And Texas ranchers combat overgrazing to fight climate change. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump boasted Monday of his very strong and personal relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping. He declared a new U.S.-China trade deal would immediately allow American farmers to sell more of their products to Beijing. Stock markets in Asia and Europe jumped sharply after Trump and Xi, as leaders of the world's two biggest economies, agreed Saturday in Argentina to not impose any new tariffs on each other's exports for the next 90 days while they negotiate a detailed trade agreement. U.S. stock indices also opened sharply higher in New York at the start of a new work week, with a widely watched Dow Jones Industrial Average of 30 key stocks ahead more than 1.5%. Late Sunday, Trump tweeted that China has agreed to reduce and remove tariffs on cars coming into China from the U.S. Currently, the tariff is 40%. On Monday, China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said the Chinese and U.S. presidents had agreed to work towards removing all tariffs. Phil Levy is a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He served as senior economist for trade to former President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisers and then as a member of former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's policy planning staff. He spoke with VOA's Ira Melman, who asked him if the new agreement is a truce in the economic relationship between the two countries.
It is a small truce. It means that for the moment, the more pragmatic set of advisors for the president have won out, and they're pushing for talks that might lead to a lowering of tariff barriers. I think I would expect, though, that we have not solved this problem for the long run, because the other set of advisors, the ones who cautioned exactly against accepting some baubles and ongoing talks, they're still there, and I can't imagine they like this one bit.
Where do you think Trump really stands on this?
I think President Trump wavers. I think on the one hand, he buys into many of the critiques that, you know, there's fundamental issues with China that need to be addressed. On the other hand, he likes to cut a deal, and a quick deal. And those two desires are inconsistent. The kind of problems that they've been flagging with China, such as subsidies, regulatory problems, intellectual property issues, those are things that are difficult and subtle and take a long time to work out. They're not things you fix over dinner. So what we end up with is sort of an awkward compromise where you give yourself 90 days to tackle problems that have plagued us for years.
What do you think happens next? What are the next steps here?
They've given themselves a very short time frame. I mean, they're talking about 90 days, and it's worth remembering that's 90 days that contain, you know, Christmas and New Year's in the U.S. and then Chinese New Year for them. So this is not much time to work on things. I think we have a little stretch here where we've essentially postponed tariffs for 2 months, and then the Trump administration is going to have to make a decision. Do they snap back to their escalation and complaints? Or do they try for some face-saving resolution?
You can't be in their shoes, as you can't be in the U.S. negotiator's shoes. But as far as the Chinese are concerned, where do you think they're coming from?
I think the Chinese have found the Trump administration baffling. It's worth remembering, this is not the first deal that the Trump administration has struck, nor is it even the first deal that that President Trump has, you know, paraded around as a fantastic, fabulous, you know, historic agreement. We had one in the spring of his very first year. And then after the glow wore off, they went right back to doing trade battles. He had his visit to Beijing in November of last year. It was wonderful. It was fabulous. No one's ever been treated as nicely. And then they launched into all of these tariffs. So I think the Chinese think they're playing for time and they'll just take whatever comes next.
I'm trying to figure out where Xi Jinping might go from here beside waiting. Are there any steps he might take, either positively or negatively, to go further?
I think there's a range of things that China can do which are within sort of a reasonable realm. I think it has probably come as a bit of a shock to them, the extent to which they have lost the support of the U.S. business community. And you've seen requests coming out of the U.S. business community, things that they could do in terms of treating foreign investment, in terms of dealing with intellectual property. He would be well advised to try and address some of those concerns that have been raised. There's also the sort of very standard offers that one can make of lowering some tariffs, agreeing to make some extra purchases. And I think they've tried that, although they didn't lay out the details after this dinner. That's my guess of his next move. If the holdout is for fundamental, deep Chinese reforms at, you know, U.S. insistence, that's not going to happen, at least not in the very short run.
The two of us have talked in the past about the security that China was offered, or lack of so. And you have apparently some promises when it comes to that. And you also have the agreement by China to designate fentanyl as a controlled substance. But what are your reactions to those things?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, so we saw these two things which do not count as traditional trade issues. One, the fentanyl, and then the other, some talk about how to deal with North Korea, that were both raised. I think this is China pulling some strings and reminding the president that there's other aspects to this relationship and it may be worth preserving. So these were things that allowed the president a bit more of a face-saving exit from the tariffs he had planned, or at least a postponement. It's that what was not touched were the kind of security concerns that Vice President Mike Pence raised a month or two ago about China. So that kind of cuts both ways. In this case, it was used as an excuse to postpone the tariffs.
Phil Levy, Senior Fellow on the Global Economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He was speaking with VOA's Ira Melman. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The Soros-founded university is forced out of Hungary. U.S. President Donald Trump writes to Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan to seek cooperation on Afghan peace. The U.N. chief says the world is in deep trouble because of climate change, and Houthi fighters are evacuated from Yemen. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
NASA retired its Kepler spacecraft at the end of October, but among its last observations on February 4, 2018, the Planet Hunting Space Telescope helped give teams of astronomers an extraordinary look at the very first moments of a violent stellar explosion called a Type 1A supernova. Past research indicates that typical Type 1A supernovas usually grow in brightness over the span of a couple of weeks before it fades away. But the astronomers noticed that this particular supernova was unusual because it quickly brightened in just a few days after its initial explosion. Scientists consider Type 1A supernovas important to understanding the workings of space and are used as cosmic rulers to measure distances across the universe. To make their observations and develop their findings, the teams of astronomers used both space and a variety of ground-based observatories. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Texas ranchers try to deal with climate change. Retailers, hotels, and restaurants in Paris Monday assessed damages brought on by a second weekend of violent yellow vest protests. What began as a demonstration organized on social media for November 17th to protest higher taxes on diesel fuel has morphed into a larger opposition against French President Emmanuel Macron. Macron visited the graffiti-damaged Arc de Triomphe monument and held an emergency meeting on security Sunday. Macron, who was meeting with his prime minister and interior and environment ministers, has vowed that those responsible for the violence and the damages will pay for their actions. Paris police said Sunday that 133 people had been injured and 412 had been arrested as protesters trashed the streets of the capital during a demonstration Saturday against rising taxes and the high cost of living. International Edition's Laurie London gets the latest on what's happening on the ground with Paris-based journalist Catherine Field.
You've really got two separate pictures. You've got the picture here in Paris where you have had a weekend which saw some of the worst street urban violence in the center of the city for years. Now, that was really a lot of protesters who'd come from outside of the capital, come into the capital to protest, plus you'd also had ultra-left and ultra-right-wing groups coming in and infiltrating that so-called yellow vest protest movement. Now, they had this 12-hour spree in the center of Paris where they played cat and mouse with the police. Buildings were set on fire, cars were set on fire, banks were looted, shops were broken into. And that was pretty much the picture that everyone had of the capital. Outside the capital, you've got a far more clearer picture of what this actual protest is, which is you've got at least a dozen cities and towns across the country where there have been large demonstrations of just everyday folk going into the center of town and protesting against higher taxes and falling living standards. And there you're seeing little bits of violence, but not very much. And generally what you're seeing is just groups of people, you're protesting and blocking entrances to fuel depots, picketing outside town hall. So you're really seeing that across the country. At the base of all this is just this feeling that President Emmanuel Macron is now perceived as having favored the rich, that his personal manner, in a way, is at best aloof, at worst arrogant. That's how it's seen by these people. And they just feel that all these weeks of protests have got them nowhere, and he's just not listening to them.
I'm not sure about in France, but I know here if some of the things that were happening here or happening there, what we're hearing about, it might deter from their message. We're hearing about torched cars, smashed windows, looted stores. Is it hurting their message?
This, I think, is one of the aspects that President Macron is hoping for. And in particular, when you look at some of the destruction that was done during the demonstrations at the Arc de Triomphe, the monument to the Republic of France, the monument to the war dead. And I think Emmanuel Macron is hoping that the destruction there, the fact that this monument was tagged, that protesters went inside and ransacked, I think he's hoping that may prove to be a turning point, that ordinary protesters will feel, oh, enough is enough, this has gone too far. So that, if anything's going to cause them to think again about whether or not they come out next Saturday for more demonstrations, it's going to be that, because there has been a lot of disgust that has been expressed in many ways as to how much damage and how much sacrilege was caused to that great Arc de Triomphe monument.
Journalist Catherine Field in Paris. The flag-draped coffin of former President George H.W. Bush was loaded onto an Air Force plane Monday in Houston, Texas, and it will travel to Washington, D.C. for funeral services. President Donald Trump has proclaimed Wednesday a day of national mourning following the death Friday of Bush at the age of 94. He was the 41st president who presided over the end of the Cold War and led an international coalition that ousted Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein's forces from Kuwait in 1991. Larry Sabato is a political science professor at the University of Virginia and the founder and director of its Center for Politics. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty Bush's legacy has grown with time.
It's pretty obvious as people look back and as people are recollecting the Bush presidency, it looks a heck of a lot better than it did at the end of it. Bush, of course, was defeated for re-election, and most people at the time considered him a failed president. But now I think we can see in retrospect that he was actually quite successful, arguably the best one-term president we ever had. He may be tied with John Adams and James K. Polk, but he's at least up at the very top end of a pretty large group of one-term presidents. So it's funny how history works, but the good thing is that with time, you could have reconsideration.
A stellar career, starting with as a young man in the U.S. Navy during the Second World War, a congressman, CIA director, ambassador to China, vice president, and now president. Quite a career.
What a life. What a career. It is amazing. And, of course, Bush was our last World War II veteran to serve as president, so he ended an era. He was a hero in World War II, but he was the son of a senator. And as the son of a senator, he grew up in a political household. So no one was surprised when he started running for office from Texas in the 1960s. What people often forget is he wasn't very successful. He lost two Senate races. He won two races for the House of Representatives. But he went from there to the United Nations. He also served as a liaison to China before we had a full-fledged ambassador. And finally, he was head of the CIA. Then he served after the Carter term. He served two terms as vice president, one term as president. It ended badly with his defeat, but I think all of that was washed away in 2000 when his son was elected president.
You remember the famous words, "Read my lips, no new taxes," but wasn't that really overshadowed by the fact that he helped win the Cold War or presided over the Cold War, and then, of course, the coalition against Saddam Hussein?
Absolutely. I was 20 yards from the podium when George Bush uttered those words at the Republican National Convention in 1988. And even then, people wondered whether conditions would permit him to keep them. Of course, he did not keep the promise. He did not hold to those words. And it hurt him badly in 1992. Oddly enough, the other thing that hurt him badly was the fact that he skillfully helped the end of the Cold War. He did not grandstand. He didn't run to Berlin to dance on the wall once it had fallen. He realized that these new emerging countries needed time and space and no goading, no grandstanding from the United States to make their way. Essentially, it eliminated foreign policy as a major consideration in the 1992 election, and that helped Bill Clinton, who had no foreign policy experience.
AP leads their story, Bush mourned as great statesman, man of uncommon decency.
To be honest, at one point in history, it would not have been exceptional to have a president who obeyed and appreciated the norms of the American system and of the presidency, who was civil, who was kind to people, and who rose above petty squabbles. But, you know, things have changed, particularly in the last couple of years. And the contrast between George H.W. Bush and the current president could not be more stark.
Political analyst Larry Sabato, he was speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. As the impact of climate change is becoming clearer, experts say the world needs to do more than just stop producing greenhouse gases. Aggressive steps also must be taken to pull them out of the atmosphere. While engineers puzzle over high-tech solutions, scientists say nature offers tools that are ready to go today. The world's grasslands can soak up tons of carbon dioxide. VOA Steve Barragona visited a Texas cattle ranch working to restore overgrazed land so it can join the fight against climate change.
Cattle graze on thigh-high grass at the G-Bar C Ranch in northern Texas. This is where Meredith Ellis grew up. Now she's raising her 4-year-old son here.
Everything I do, I think about him now, and I think about his future, and what is this world going to look like when he's my age.
Ellis worries about the droughts, floods, and other calamities he may face from climate change. That's a big reason why she raises her cows a bit differently than most. Her fields look like meadows, where others look like lawns. Jeff Goodwin with the Noble Research Institute says it matters because grass takes carbon dioxide from the air and sends it to the roots.
The more forage production that we're getting, the deeper the root systems, the more carbon we're sequestering out of the atmosphere.
This is the starting point, and on the other side of that fence is the end point. So can you tell a stark difference between these weeds and those golden native grasses over there.
If allowed to rest and reseed, Ellis says overgrazed land like this can start to recover in a year or two. Worldwide, an area the size of Mexico is overgrazed, by one estimate. Goodwin and the Noble Research Institute are working to change that. They're developing a marketplace that rewards ranchers like Ellis, who are working to restore the land, capture carbon, and more.
I don't think carbon's the answer. It's not the only answer. If we build a carbon market, I don't think we'll be as successful as if we build an ecosystem service market.
That's because a healthy ranch ecosystem does more than just store carbon.
Rainfall starts up on the prairie and percolates all the way down through those roots and finally empties into this creek. So by the time it gets here, it's crystal clear. It's like we have a giant Brita filter is what this is.
That means cleaner drinking water for people downstream. That's worth money. And that's just the start.
We have the intentions on building a strategy and a framework to be able to tack on biodiversity or other ecosystem services that our producers are providing today. They're just not being compensated for.
So this is an endangered orchid.
Ellis says the money may encourage more ranchers to do what she does, but that's not why she does it.
Like, how do you quantify that, you know? How do you quantify the monarch butterflies that need to rest here? You know, how important to humanity and our planet is that? And I think it's extremely important and not something to overlook.
Some major food and beverage companies are interested in the market. By 2022, Noble hopes to be rewarding ranchers for doing the right thing. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Cook County, Texas.
Thanks very much, Steve. Well, that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.